And one thing you can say about Plattner is, you know, his story about all of this has sort of been the same. I came back from the war. I was a broken person. I had a lot of things to work through. I made a bunch of mistakes when I was in the military and after, and I'm really trying to, you know, I'm working my way through it. But here's what's really wrong. The corporate leaders of the country are taking over the country, and the rest of the working people need to have an agenda and somebody fighting for them in Congress. You know, I think people are buying that. Hey friends, welcome back to Trailblaze, the road to 2028. I'm here with Matt Butler. How you doing, Matt?
Doing great, Jamal. How are you?
I'm good. You know, there's a lot happening. Summer is making its circle around town, around the country. You know, I'm seeing a lot of people taking off and doing fun and interesting things. Sadly, we are not one of them in our
We're
house.
We're here.
We are here. But a big week in politics as people get ready for the 2026 midterms. And, you know, we're really concerned about what that would mean for the 2028 presidential election. So there have been a couple of big moves from one candidate in particular I think you've been paying attention to, Mr. Governor Beshear from Kentucky.
Yeah, Andy Beshear had a big weekend this weekend. So he went down to South Carolina. It's his second trip to South Carolina in the last year. He appeared at Jim Clyburn's annual fish fry, which is sort of kind of one of these things, one of these really canonical political events that take place every year. And obviously Jim Clyburn is incredibly important to who gets the kind of the nomination from a South Carolina perspective, or who's going to have the best shot to win the South Carolina primary. We know that Clyburn was integral in helping Joe Biden win that that primary back in 2020 when he consolidated the field and was able to push past Bernie Sanders. So Andy Beshear was there along with Ro Khanna, but apparently he was very, very well received. He gave a great speech. The audience really, really reacted to him. He was able to name Jim Clyburn an official Kentucky colonel.
He made him a Kentucky colonel.
Yeah, he made him a Kentucky colonel, and it was sort of sad to see Ro Khanna standing kind of behind and off to the left as he did this. And, you know, here he's like, I was like, oh, I didn't bring anything. So it was really good for Beshear. He was also on Meet the Press and was pretty strong on that appearance. So I think big weekend for Andy Beshear. And, you know, I think a lot of people are going to start talking about him more.
I think, the Beshear team probably walked past the kind of team, looked at him and said, rookies.
Well, you know, it's also bad because you always have to end up in the Clyburn, like the Clyburn fish fry t-shirts, like, and they're blue. Yes. And you're over your button down, and like I said, when I was looking at this thing, you could also see there's Beto O'Rourke from, you know, 8 years ago or 4 years ago in the same, or 6 years ago in the same situation. It just always looks terrible. But you know what, you're not gonna tell Jim Clyburn, I'm not putting on your t-shirt. Like, you just will not do that.
And I will say this, just as a comms person, the lighting is horrible.
The sound is bad.
It's just, you know, it is purely a grassroots event. Is for the people who were there, and to say that you went, and obviously gives you all the credibility for having done it. But it is not the pinnacle of media. Media politics.
No, and it's definitely not. And then also, like, you compare that to, like, there, you know, John Ossoff had a couple of rallies this weekend, and his advance people are really, really good at setting up those rallies so that the pictures are absolutely perfect. I mean, it really does look like Barack Obama is in Georgia and giving rally speeches. So because the details are so good, they do the details so well there.
Here's the only difference. I know a lot of people like John Ossoff, and he is a compelling United States senator from Georgia, I think, who will win this race for the Georgia Senate, although I'm always superstitious about Georgia Senate reelections, having been through one that didn't work out. I just want him to smile more. But maybe I'm just like a relic. Maybe I'm like a relic of an earlier era.
No, we want him to smile sometimes. Yeah, we want
some
smiles.
He's a good-looking guy.
I think you're right. Look, and these are crazy times, and there's a lot to be angry about, but you can't be angry all the time. And I think somebody running for president, there's got to be a vision for hope and for good things to come. And that should come along with a smile. Like, when you're going to be the successor to Donald Trump, you should be happy about that. This show's all about hope. It's about the day after Trump's out of office. And we know that's coming, and that's going to be a very happy time if it's a Democrat in office. So you're absolutely right. He should absolutely smile more. Can't be super intense all the time.
So one thing that is not so happy, but is definitely happening right now and people are paying attention, is what's happening in Newark, New Jersey with Delaney Hall, the immigration detention facility that people have called all sorts of things, concentration camp. People have called it obviously it's a detention center. It's an internment camp. There are huge problems with what's happening in that place. There are 18-year-old high school girls who are being held. There are pregnant women, recently delivered, neonatal, women who still would be nursing their babies if they were not there in that facility. There are families, I mean, it's all sorts of things that are happening. They're being underfed. There's stories about bad toilets and people sharing like one stocked up toilet to be able to
rotten food.
Food. It's just it's miserable. And on top of that, for a long time they weren't letting people inside. And so what was happening was, we can get Red Cross officials into, detention centers overseas, but we couldn't get members of Congress into a federal detention center in the United States. It's just abhorrent. The one person who's really been all over this and on top of it has been Cory Booker, who is the senator from New Jersey. He also has, it appears, some interest in the 2028 campaign. We have not, however, seen more people from the 2028 list make their way up to Delaney Hall and to Newark to make big statements about it. We did, however, see minority leader Hakeem Jeffries lead a delegation there in the last couple of days. So if you're listening, if you are one of these presidential candidates, I think you need to go. I think you need to go to Delaney Hall. I think you certainly need to be talking about it. This may be one of those touchstone moments where 2 years from now, people ask, where were you when this happened? And did you stand up?
Yeah. And I think it's probably indicative of problems that are happening all over the country, because this is not the only private detention facility holding people who've been detained by ICE. So it's probably happening in many other places, but not getting the coverage. So this is going to be a huge issue for these 2028 candidates, kind of, and where we are with the issue of immigration. And it's a very, very tough issue for people to handle. So we gotta figure it out. You gotta be very specific on it.
And DHS got a huge budget that the Republicans passed for in the last budget cycle. So they really have all the money they need. They've been going around the country procuring these sites everywhere. We don't really know exactly what they're planning for them and when they're gonna open and what they're gonna do with it. At the same time, I think a lot of people in the country who were for shutting down the border from, there was a huge immigration influx. So some people said, let's get control of the border and at least have a more secure border with an orderly process. I think that was something that Donald Trump ran on that was popular. At the same time, he ran on, let's get rid of the worst of the worst, the rapists, the murderers, the gang leaders, all that stuff. Let's get rid of those folks. But when you hear about 18-year-old high school girls and moms being held in detention centers that are unable to breastfeed their babies, that's not the worst of the worst. That's not what people signed up for.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's another example of the Trump administration running on one thing and then doing something completely and totally different. Not unexpected, not surprising, but people were, people legitimately vote. I mean, I think you say people legitimately voted for Donald Trump, thinking that he was going to be able to change policy on some of these very important issues to them. And I think most of us can agree we should have a strong border policy. We shouldn't just be able to let anybody come in and out. But let's be reasonable about it. And this is, one of the best examples of this kind of the authoritarian nature of Donald Trump and the people that he has in power. And we've got to be able to fix it. So the good news out of Delaney is it sounds like things have calmed down a little bit. It's going to be the Newark police in charge of things and kind of like working with the protesters as opposed to either the state police or ICE. And so I think we're probably on a good glide path to at least hoping ending the violence outside of the detention center. And then hopefully folks can get some real information about what's going on inside and get those issues resolved as well. And then hopefully, even like the governor says, we should get it shut down at some point.
Yeah. And listen, I have been, obviously, I was in the White House in 2022 and 3, and immigration was a very tough issue. Obviously, Vice President Kamala Harris had it on her portfolio, dealing particularly with shutting down the access, the roots of migration, is what we called it, more so than the border. But still, people sort of looked at her as the person who was in charge of the border, whether or not that was actually the job. Here's the thing. I know it's tricky, and I know people worry about where they're going to stand and what's going to happen. But what you cannot do is walk away from it. What we learned in the Harris process is not doing anything is the wrong answer. Not speaking up, not taking it taking it on head on is absolutely not the right way to go. And I think everybody who's thinking about getting in this race, you're gonna need a policy about the border and about immigration, and you can't run away from it and you can't duck it. So you ought to just work it out now, get in there, and like you said, Matt, it's probably happening all over the country. So step up where you are and make people know where you stand.
Yes, this is one of those areas where it's sort of interesting. Like, the job that you currently have really kind of either helps or hinders kind of what you can do. So, you know, Cory Booker, being a United States senator, gets to see this going on. I think he's already put forth legislation to ban private detention centers from housing ICE detainees. And that's awesome. Like, you can just do that. We've got 6 or 7 governors in the mix, and they obviously are either working or not working with immigration, customs enforcement kind of every day. And so we get to see what they're going to do. A lot of these candidates will really be able to show where they're going to be on immigration now. And as you said, you've got to be doing something. You cannot duck this issue. And I understand it is a tough issue. The energy is kind of on the left, abolish ICE. And, you know, but you know, if you're going to go down that route, you're going to get whacked around in the general, because the right is going to come in and being like, you're soft on immigration. You're letting all of these, you know, criminals in the country. And, you know, we saw how that went. So I get that it's a very tough issue for the Democratic politicians, but you've got to be able to figure out where your policy is, and you've got to be able to stand firm on it.
So we got one more issue that is definitely making the news right now, and I think it will be one of these things that's like a ricochet. It's going to start in 2026, but it's going to ricochet all the way through 2028. That's what's happening up in Maine with Graham Plattner, who's running for the Senate against Susan Collins. He is now the primary Democratic candidate. The current governor, Janet Mills, has stepped down from the race, although yep. She made sure this people do this week. Her name is still on the ballot, so there's still a chance. there's still a chance. So, but, you know, Plattner, it came out that he had some explicit texts with another woman while he was married, the beginning of his marriage. His wife has come out and pushed back on that as a story, and said that he's gone through therapy and he's working his way through it, and she's proud of him and all that. But it all seems to be piling up. Matt, what do you think about Mr. Plattner's chances and where we are?
Well, listen, I think that he's definitely winning the primary, so he's going to be the nominee. It looks like in most of the prediction markets, he's fallen a little bit, but he's still got a very solid lead over Susan Collins. I mean, this is obviously not a great situation for him. I think anything that is kind of piling on, like whether this guy should be a United States senator or not, is not good. We absolutely need to win that seat as Democrats to have any chance of taking back the Senate. And that is absolutely critical to start changing kind of where we've been going with this country. We have to have another check on President Trump. So this is all really bad. In terms of the substance of the issues, like, I really don't think it's any of our business. Seems like it is a personal issue between Graham Plattner and his wife. His wife seems to have forgiven him. It's not like there's no like kind of indication of abuse or kind of abuse of like a position, you know, which you've seen some of these things sort of take down politicians in the past. So, you know, if she's okay with it, I don't think we're really in any kind of position to judge on it. I mean, marriage is complicated, as we all know. So I'm hopeful that this is not going to stop him from winning that Senate seat. But we'll see. And obviously, these kind of issues will come up potentially for any of the 19 or so potential candidates in 2028.
Yeah, that's the place where here's what we don't know. That's the place where I've been really looking to get to. We don't know if Donald Trump changed the math or was the first person who was evidence of a change that people really don't care that much about a candidate's past, and they care a lot more about their future, which I think has been true for a while. We know that to be true. I mean, Bill Clinton, it wasn't like it was a secret that Bill Clinton liked the ladies, right? Like yeah. that was, he ran in 1992 through that muck. So, you know, it's just something now like people will have checkered, you know, personal stories, and the voters just don't care if you've got a policy and a political position that they buy into.
I think that's right, with some kind of limitations and a lot of caveats. Like, I think if you're in right. any sort of situation where you've abused your position and entered into a relationship with somebody who's an intern that works for you, or, you know, I understand that Clinton survived it. He wasn't impeached, but I don't know that
he also wasn't on the ballot.
Reelected.
That's right. That's
exactly. Right. Was. I don't know that he would have been reelected. You know, if you've got a situation or a staffer that works for you, like I don't think people are going to be kind of accepting of those situations. And certainly if there's any kind of allegation of abuse, that's not somebody should be anywhere near politics. But yeah, I think Donald Trump has changed the kind of dynamics a little bit, but also we've kind of agreed that the rules don't apply to Donald Trump the way that they apply to everybody else. And so I wouldn't think that if I was a politician, I would not think that just because it doesn't apply to Donald Trump, that Donald Trump gets away with it, that I'm going to be able to get away with it, because I don't think that that is true. But I think it's probably hopefully going to be a little more relaxed going into this, because the fact is we don't want perfect people in office. Like, people are imperfect. Right. We want imperfect representatives to some level to understand what people actually go through. When you get these kind of perfect people, we just sort of have these robotic politicians, which everybody is rejecting right now anyway. So I am hopeful that this kind of personal stuff isn't going to matter, but hopefully there won't be a lot of it either in the kind of the backgrounds of our candidates coming through.
Yeah. And look, Platner has had, he's gone through this for a while, tattoos and, you know, statements online and all that mucky stuff. And it looks like the voters, at least the Democratic voters in Maine, don't really care about it. And I guess even in the polls, he's 7, 8, 9 points ahead of Susan Collins in some polls. So it doesn't seem like people really care. We'll see what happens in this next tranche of polls when people can take a look at it again. But, you know, it could also be very true that we are moving into some phase of politics where, you know, people are just willing to allow candidates to have this, you know, these checkered personal pasts. And some of these candidates who are running in 2028, you know, should really pay attention to it. And I would say, you know, get some of that stuff out there sooner rather than later so that people can work their way through it. And the one thing you can say about Platner is, you know, his story about all of this has sort of been the same. I came back from the war. I was a broken person. I had a lot of things to work through. I made a bunch of mistakes when I was in the military and after, and I'm really trying to, you know, I'm working my way through it. But here's what's really wrong. The corporate leaders of the country are taking over the country, and the rest of the working people need to have an agenda and somebody fighting for them in Congress. You know, I think people are buying that.
Yeah. And if he sticks with it and, you know, as he is elected and he stays with that, we actually need that. We need people in the Senate fighting for working people. That is absolutely 100% what we need. And hopefully he will do that. And then I think the people of Maine will stay behind him if that is the case. So, you know, who cares?
You know, one thing I wanted to, a slight a degree off of the main story here, I want to get your opinion on this. We hear a lot from candidates and from groups about the moderates think that they're the most essential part of the equation when it comes to the election, because we got to get independent voters and those swing voters to vote. You know, the people of color maybe often say, like, we've got to get young people of color to be really invested and get them excited, get them to vote, look at them as a persuasion target, not a turnout target. Got to pay attention. The kind of Bernie economic populists say, you know, we need an agenda against the billionaires and a fight for, you know, working people. And we're the ones who are the most important. You got to talk to us. You know, are any of them really the most important? Or is everybody kind of important? I feel like we get in trouble when we start trying to say which part of the coalition is the most important part of the coalition.
I think you're right. I don't think there is any most important part of the coalition. I mean, it is a coalition. It's got to have little pieces of all of those. We've got to have somewhere where the broad majority of Democrats can get behind, get excited, and show up at the polls. You know, I mean, people are talking about there's no such thing as a swing voter anymore. I don't think that's true. I think there are people who have gone back and forth between Biden and Trump, between Clinton and Trump, Harris and Trump, whatever it is. There are certainly some persuadable folks who are not tied to any individual party. They're not Republicans. They're not Democrats. They just want the government to be working for them or to be staying out of their lives, one of the two. And we've got to be able to get those people on our side and in and behind one of these folks. And it sounds like a lot of people who traditionally voted Democrat voted for Donald Trump because they felt like he was for them from an economic perspective. And he was going to be, you know, all of the labor folks that voted for him. So, I don't think there's any one particular coalition that is going to be important. But I do think these kind of factors of being incredibly charismatic, having being able to get people behind you to like make it feel like a movement that people want to be part of, that is going to be key to winning this next election.
Yeah, and what's that website? I saw them on TV earlier. I should know what this is, but the Raging Moderates. I mean, the one thing I feel like for my friends who are in kind of the centrist third way kind of camp that they've really got to pay attention to. You might have pro market, you know, or whatever philosophy and policies that are not quite, you know, super progressive. But what you cannot be, you can be a moderate in policy. You can't be a moderate in tone. Yeah. I think people really want to know that you're going to get up in these people's faces and who you're fighting for. And I think that's the danger with some of the moderate policy is that people feel like maybe it's too cozy with the corporate class and it's not willing to fight for working people on behalf of the corporate class. And if you really do have credibility with the big companies, go in those companies and fight for the people who work there.
I
think that matters.
Yeah, I think Amanda Lipman said something or wrote something really interesting about this and right on point earlier this year, which is centrism is not a political philosophy. And, you know, more than that, it's like incredibly boring. Like there's nothing to like moderate policy. It's not going to get anybody excited. Like we have huge problems in this country to fix. And somebody who's like saying, I'm going to take on special interests. I'm going to take on corporate interests. I'm going to be for the people. That's exciting. That is like, those are hard challenges. We want to get behind somebody like that. So that's why I still think the path to this nomination is maybe not quite so far left as AOC wrote Khanna, but I do think it is pretty far left from the sort of Andy Beshear, Josh Shapiro moderate kind of wing of this party. So I still think that's what's going to get this nomination done.
I still, in 2016, one of my favorite ways that this came out was Bernie Sanders was like, free college. And then Hillary Clinton's position was, we're going to take on the banks to lower the student loan interest rate for moderate middle income families. And it was like, I think free college.
It's a lot of words. A lot of
free
words.
Free college was beating lower the interest rate for middle income families. Now, it might have been a fine policy. There's merit to the policy. But just as a political matter, you couldn't beat free college with, you know, lower the interest rates for middle-class families.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, this was, there's a lot going on. I think we will stay on top of it. And I appreciate another week of hanging out with you, Matt.
Yeah. It's good to talk to you, Jamal.